Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Jeff Shepherdson, an educator, mediator, and trainer at the Community Dispute Resolution Center, a nonprofit covering Chemung, Schuyler, and Tompkins counties. CDRC's mission is to foster constructive responses to conflict. It was founded in 1983 with the philosophy that people should have an informal, quick, and inexpensive community-based option for dealing with disputes. Jeff Shepherdson is also a certified mediator with the Institute for the Study of Conflict Transformation. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tish. Good to be here.
Now, tell us a little bit about your background and how you got interested in this subject of conflict resolution.
Well, I kind of fell into it, I guess. It was almost, I shouldn't say by mistake, but it was almost that kind of casual. Uh-huh. I had done some changing in my own life and had come back from after living in the Midwest for many years and was doing church work. I'm an ordained elder in Methodist tradition. And so I came back to the area and there was a position open at CDRC. Up to that point, I'd never heard much about mediation. So I didn't have much background with the work of mediation and conflict resolution. But I took real quickly to it, and the theory and model behind the work that CDRC does is real solid stuff, has a real theoretical framework and groundwork that really makes a lot of sense, I think, and really makes the work that we do pretty solid. Mm-hmm. Given that, I just, once I started with it, I really felt like I'd found a home professionally.
Okay. You know, I would think coming from a religious tradition that you would have had some kind of training in resolving people's, at least, problems in some way.
Think.
The same kind of...
Yeah, and certainly I think in a lot of the different kind of professions, there is that element that we all do, kind of problem solving and helping people in conflict. But we do it really differently, I think, depending upon our profession. And I think behind that is a certain understanding of what it means to help people. Mm. And that's really what gets shifted in the work of mediation in terms of the way CDRC does it through the transformative mediation theory and framework. That is what gets shifted, what it means to help, what it means to be present for people who are in conflict really looks different.
Mm. Well, the Community Dispute Resolution Center was created in 1983 is what I understand. Can you tell us why it was created? What was the need that was missing that made these people decide to create this particular model?
Obviously, I wasn't here, but I did and continue to do some work with Judith Saul, who was the founder of CDRC. Mediation was kind of, it was a new thing. Mm-hmm. If I understand correctly, CDRC was one of the first, if not the first, mediation center in New York State. It was shortly thereafter, I think, that the Unified Court System of New York officially began to fund mediation centers in all of the counties across the state. And so I think Judy had done some of the initial legwork already. Then the state came along and kind of began to fund the center. And over the years, it's always been kind of at the vanguard of mediation and certainly continues to be that, I think, even today.
Mm-hmm. After 30 years, it's quite amazing.
Right.
What's behind the philosophy of recruiting community members as volunteers to do this kind of work instead of professionals?
The mediators that we recruit, the volunteers that we recruit, come from a wide variety of professions. Some who have extensive professional experience from all walks of life, all different age groups, ethnicities. It's really a great group of mediators. We extend an open invitation. Certainly we screen our mediators in terms of helping them to understand what the process is, what our expectations are, and if they feel like it's a good match. The training process itself is rather extensive. There's 6 full days of training, and then that's followed by an apprenticeship period that often lasts 3 to 6 months, and then there's an ongoing in-service continuing education component for all of our volunteers. So the theory and method of mediation as CDRC practices it, i.e. the transformative mediation process, is actually really resonates for lots of people, but not for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about what that means. What is the process? What is the philosophy?
The philosophy itself of transformative mediation is really an understanding about conflict as a crisis in human interaction. So much of our conflict resolution centers around problem solving. Mm-hmm. The reason you and I are having difficulties with each other is because we can't agree about A, or we can't get our heads together about B. And really, our understanding of conflict is that it is a crisis in interaction that set itself up between you and me. It ceased to be about the problem. The problem may have initially brought us to the conflict, but now we're kind of stuck in a real negative interaction. And so what we do as mediators then is to support people shifting that negative interaction into a more positive place, into a more positive, constructive interaction, out of which people then can solve their problems.
Is it basically a communication problem that you find people having?
Or clearly.
Personality conflicts as well, probably, of course.
Oh, yes. That all plays into it. Everything mm-hmm. plays into it. Our backgrounds, our differences, our personalities, our understandings of the problem. But the thing that gets us stuck is kind of the fact that we become a little bit off balance and out of our element, and then as a result of that, cut off from the other. And so until we can kind of repair that, we're not able to do the good work of problem solving that we're all quite capable of doing.
Yeah.
We've gotten our wires crossed and we can't do it.
How much do you concentrate on fear? Because a lot of conflict in life, obviously, is caused by people's fears.
Fear is a major element in people kind of getting off base. And along with many other kinds of experiences when it comes to conflict, confusion, a sense of being vulnerable, a sense of not having the big picture, and then as a result of that, kind of cutting ourselves off from the other person. So the communication itself breaks down. And the emotional component itself, fear, anger, resentments, you know, all of those great human emotions mm-hmm. that we have, mm-hmm. they have a place, but they can also get in the way of us thinking clearly about what our options are and how we want to proceed.
Yeah.
You know, we're very transparent about fear, and some people's fears are based in a need to protect, and we're transparent about that as well. We don't want people to go into situations where they're going to be hurt in any way or a disservice done to them. So we do a lot of screening, and we're careful with people in terms of asking them clearly, is this something you feel safe doing? You know, is this something that you think will be of service to you? And we have careful conversations with people about the process prior to actually entering into the mediation.
And how does it begin? If like a couple calls you and say they're having problems with a divorce, you know, issue, mm-hmm. do you sit and just listen to both of their sides separately or together? How do you decide how to even negotiate in mm-hmm. in a landscape like that?
Well, there's kind of two steps to the process at CDRC. The first step is via our case coordinator staff. And they are the people who actually check in individually with the parties mm-hmm. to talk to them about the issues, what's going on for them, what do they hope to accomplish in mediation. Almost every situation that comes to us is able to be mediated.
Really?
Some things we can't because perhaps there's an order of protection in place or both parties aren't willing to talk. I mean, there are certainly some things that prevent us from mediating. If we feel that there is, you know, a place for mediation, but we also feel like a person could use an advocate in the room, or perhaps there needs to be an attorney in the room, or, you know, some other sort of resource or support person, then we reach out to those people or encourage the parties to reach out to those people. Our goal is to make sure that the conversation is as useful and constructive as possible. So we ask the question, who needs to be at the table in order for that to be the case? So, you know, mediations can be between you and me, or they can be kind of between you, me, and my friend and my therapist or my attorney or whomever actually needs to be mm-hmm. present.
And do you do these in people's homes, in people's offices, or do they have to come to your conference room? How does it work to make people mm-hmm. comfortable?
Typically, we do it at the office. Mm-hmm. Most of our cases, I'd say maybe, I want to be careful, I'm not 100% positive about this, but I think at least 60% of our cases come to us from the family courts. So it's really about parents, families who are going through transitions. It could be, you know, they're trying to renegotiate custody and parenting time with their children, or they're doing it for the first time. I don't want to say they're routine, because they're anything but routine, but they're a lot of what we do. And so those cases actually will come to the office. We have specialized mediation cases. One that I'm actually quite involved in over the years is the Elder Mediation Program.
I was going to bring that up.
Yeah, Wise Talk. And that is actually one of the hallmarks of that program, is that we actually do go into people's homes. The mediators will actually go and sit with family members, you know, at the dinner table or in the living room, or bedside even, and have the conversations that people want to support, having those conversations in their home settings.
Wow, that's quite a commitment.
it really is. It really was. The program has kind of waned over the last few years as we were really focusing and developing it. It was pretty intense. But clearly, at least in my opinion, some of the most profound and rewarding mediation work that I've done since being at CDRC was with our elder mediation cases.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Really,
in addition to helping people with some of these, you know, short-term problems and conflicts, do you give people tools to understand conflict and how to deal with it, perhaps at a later date?
I think the process itself, the experience of mediation itself, as we practice it, is very empowering for the people who go through it. Hopefully at the end, we don't give them tools per se. We give them an experience where they have experienced a certain amount of empowerment, and they've experienced themselves as able to work through this problem. So the mediators don't come in and say, well, based upon what you've told us, you really should be doing A, B, and C. What they do is they come in and they support people repairing their interaction, having a conversation, and then brainstorming next steps based upon what makes sense for them. Mm-hmm. So that as they walk out of that experience, they have a sense that they're able to do that, maybe more so than when they came in.
Did you ever find that some of the people working in this program get too attached to the clients? And the clients start, you know, calling all the time and almost turning some of your staff into therapists.
I have heard that.
I can imagine that happening. Because these are intimate situations, a lot of them.
They are.
You know.
Yeah. So there's a lot on the line. There's a lot to talk about. And, yeah, I think that that's happened from time to time. But, you know, I think once the mediation has happened, people are able to kind of move on.
Mm-hmm. Did you work with professionals in the community like psychologists and social workers and so on to hone your program, so to speak?
We sure did. And especially the specialized programs. Over the years, we've done many different kinds of special programs. We've done work with DSS and Adult Family and Children's Services, with permanency mediation and service plan review mediations, where we actually work with the caseworkers and the social workers and the attorneys to actually have conversations with everybody present in the room, including the parents and the foster parents. That's a really great program that we've done over the years. And the elder mediation program, certainly we worked extensively with the aging services networks. We've done work in the past with the probation department around PINS and pre-PINS mediation cases and working with children at risk, youth at risk. There's so many different ways I think we've focused our resources over the years. Those are just a few of them. And most of them are pretty heavily collaborative in nature in terms of, you know, getting other professionals' input and around how that should look.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Jeff Shepherdson from the Community Dispute Resolution Center. You know, I want to talk to you about the parent-child disputes that have come up probably through the years. How do you empower a child and not have the adult take over the conversation and the, you know, the entire atmosphere of decision-making?
Right. The way we do that is to have a youth mediator in the room. And so I'm actually right smack dab this week in the middle of doing a training at BOCES down in Elmira. And it's with a group of 19 seniors, high school seniors, and we're doing a peer mediation program training. And though that's not exactly the same as the family mediation where, say, a parent and a child are getting together, it's still what we do as an agency and have done over the years is to train youth in the exact same skill set and mediation training so that they can kind of be present and support youth who actually come to a mediation. We do in-school mediations as well, where we may like actually go and help mediate with a group of youth who are having difficulty seeing eye to eye. And sometimes in the past, we've actually had youth join us to help with that kind of work as well. Mm-hmm. Though right now, that's not a program, again, and maybe we can touch base on that. We've had some pretty significant funding cuts over the years.
I was going to ask you about that, too.
Yeah, so some of these programs have had to really kind of found themselves greatly diminished because we just don't have the staff to, you know, to make sure that they're...
But you do have tools in order to empower people who wouldn't necessarily be in the power position during some of these disputes, like children. Well, what about bosses and employers, you know?
Right. And
employees.
So we have to be careful about all of this because as mediators, we don't always understand what's going on in a particular situation. We can make some assumptions, but we ultimately defer to parties. You know, if they are comfortable having conversations, then we support them. We encourage them not to take risks that they don't feel comfortable taking in conversations, especially in workplace mediation settings. You know, they have to be careful. The parties are the experts in their conflict. They know best what they want. We as mediators are there to help them or to support them thinking clearly about what their options are, what they feel comfortable doing, what they feel comfortable saying, and clearly kind of supporting them and making those deliberate decisions.
Yeah, because I could see how some of this could turn into like a talk show. You know, one of those crazy talk shows on TV where they're fighting with each other, those Dr. Phil things.
Right, right.
That doesn't look like mediation. It looks like entertainment.
No, and I don't think one of the kids in the training that I was doing was asking that to, you know, this week. Do people, like, get in fist fights? And I don't think I've ever seen a fist fight. I've certainly seen lots of red faces and people hollering and pointing fingers and standing up and storming out. And all of that is the process of conflict. You know, there's... Clearly, that's what it means to be in conflict. But usually, in mediation, when people feel heard and understood, they're very quick to pull that energy down because nobody likes to be there. Well, 99% of us don't like to be there.
Exactly.
once we tend to them and really let them know that they're being heard and understood, they're usually pretty able to calm down and start figuring things out.
You know what I was going to ask you, too, and this is an era of high tech and everybody's texting and on email and stuff. Has this changed the way mediation has to deal with things? I mean, because it seems to me people are learning different ways of communicating. Some of them are healthy, some are not. And does your organization have to keep that in mind?
I think at this point, technology hasn't really displayed itself at the mediation table.
Really?
We have been thinking about doing... We actually do phone mediations, but, you know, I mean, phones have been around for a while.
Oh, absolutely.
But we do phone mediations, especially with multi-party or the elder kind of mediation work that we do where families are spread across the country or the world, and they, you know, they're all, the adult children are all calling in.
And so we have, using Skype and some of the modern
Skype,
technology?
Yes, we've used Skype, and it worked quite well. And then we also have a conference call service that we use. I think that's probably about the extent of our technology. We've certainly, you know, been thinking about, you know, the video Skyping. Otherwise, you know, there's nothing like face-to-face.
Oh, I agree. I agree. But I was thinking maybe that you've done some mediation by text. You know, one of those science fiction kind of
things. I can
things.
Only imagine.
Can you imagine that?
No, I can't.
I also want to talk about, did you still have the program called Kid Talk that was started in 2005? Mm-hmm. That sounds very interesting to me because it seems like kids are needing to relearn how to communicate in many ways to go on with our conversation about, you know, 140 characters is turning into the conversation. Now,
Kid Talk and Teen Talk, they're two of the same. They're the conflict management education program. And they were developed by some of our staff persons several years ago, probably 5, 6, maybe 7 years ago. And they've been used fairly extensively in the county areas where we actually work. We work in Tompkins County, Schuyler County, and Chemung County, so Elmira, Watkins Glen, and Ithaca areas. And we've utilized that educational component quite extensively. So it's really just about getting you know, offering kids the opportunity to learn what conflict is as kind of this crisis in human interaction, and then kind of how we can support ourselves and each other in kind of shifting the quality of that interaction to a more negative and kind of weak and self-absorbed spot to a more positive, kind of centered and more open place.
So, it sounds like something that should be taught in schools just across the board as a general rule.
It would be really nice. Actually, it'd be really nice to see this kind of curriculum in all of our master's level programs or undergrad programs or whatever, but because communication is so essential.
It is, and it seems to be going downhill, it seems to me. You know, I mean, look at the political discourse.
Yeah.
That's an example of gotcha. This is kind of a gotcha culture in some ways that we're fighting against.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I personally feel like the presence of technology is, and for all of its glory and the way it kind of, quote unquote, makes our lives easier, to the extent that it separates us, I think it diminishes us. And that's kind of off the topic. But I do think that mediation is one of those things that brings us together, and often and usually face to face. And conflict is one of the first manifestations of conflict is that it separates us, and we stop talking and we stop interacting altogether. And so
we put up walls.
Yeah. So the very act of coming together, physically coming together, is really the first and probably the biggest step in making any kind of progress.
I was interested in the fact that you have sometimes done mediation with farmers and agriculture situations. Tell us about that. I was fascinated to hear that.
Yeah, there's you know, it's really interesting. You can take this this mediation process and point it in any direction, and voila, you've got a great opportunity.
Uh-huh.
And certainly, like in Schuyler County is a heavily agricultural county, and NISAMP, the New York State Agricultural Mediation Program, is has over the years been working hard to kind of bring this process to the more rural agricultural communities. And, you know, the farmers and folks involved in agriculture are certainly kind of under pressure these days, you know, for lots of different reasons. And so, you know, the agricultural program is just one attempt to help farmers communicate better either with their neighbors or with the land use boards in the various communities of which they're a part, and so that people can kind of have a better understanding of what their options are and how they want to move forward. We are doing a training next week, actually, and this is for in Schuyler County, and specifically around how to effectively support heated community conversations, of which oftentimes agricultural issues are part and parcel.
Yeah.
Clearly these days,
a
lot of the heat is the fracking, but you know, that's important for the agricultural community as it is for the rest of us. And so that is actually part of what NISAMP is seeking to support and fund, not only kind of the individual neighbor-to-neighbor kind of communications, but also those broader, I think, community conversations that have broader impacts around agriculture and the, you know, conservation of the environment versus, you know, the need to kind of have a vibrant economy, et cetera. There's lots of...
It affects everything. You guys should set up a presidential debate and mediate that.
Right. We have the WSKG just put together a movie called Frack You.
I heard about that.
Yeah, and the local community foundation here in Tompkins County helped to fund some of that program. And I was at an award ceremony for that funding, and I heard about this movie, and they wanted to do some community talkbacks after the screenings in the different communities. And so I went up and said, hey, we'd be great for that. We could facilitate those talkbacks. And so NISAMP, the agricultural mediation program that we just talked about, got wind of it and said, hey, that's a great idea. We'll fund you to do that. So the first of those screenings is happening in November. and right here at Cinemopolis. So we're real excited about that.
Oh, that's great. That is a great thing. We'll mm-hmm. mention that again at the end
yeah.
of the show. Are there sometimes disputes that you can't negotiate and mm-hmm. and get involved with? Where do you send people?
Well, sometimes, again, I think it really depends on the nature of the conflict. As I had mentioned earlier, sometimes there are capacity issues that would really limit somebody being involved in a mediation. Other times, there's the threat or the history of domestic violence mm. or Child Protective Services has been called in and there's been an order of protection placed. Ah. Sometimes those very kind of legal things can put roadblocks up to the process of mediation. Other times, as I had said, there's just a lack of willingness on one or more of the parties to actually come together and have a conversation. So unfortunately, we cannot twist people's arms and get them into the mediation room. Sometimes the judge will refer a mediation or will strongly recommend a mediation. And even though people show up to do mediation, our mediators are careful to say, listen, this is your process. You've shown up. We'll tell the courts that you came to mediation. Now, whether or not you want to have a conversation, mm-hmm. that's completely up to you.
Yeah, yeah. So you've had a long experience doing this now, about 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
How has this changed your life and your interactions? And has it enlightened you in regard to communication?
I think deeply, yes. I think that the process is it's life-changing if you really do take it to heart. And it teaches you a lot about the importance of being clear about your own kinds of processes and what's important for you. And it's also important in terms of informing how you show up for other people.
Mm.
And listening and understanding are things that I think in this day and age especially, and maybe that's part of the technology piece, they're really challenged. We have a hard time giving people the space to communicate enough that we really get what they're saying.
Mm.
And without jumping right in and giving our opinion or telling our story. And clearly, I think communication and listening to understand has really revolutionized kind of the way I go about my day, the way I interact with people, even with my family members, and mm. probably more so with my family members than with anything, the skill of being able to really listen, to reflect what I'm hearing, and the biggest thing is to not be afraid of conflict, mm. to understand it as a natural and potentially creative part of our human interaction that goes on all the time.
We only have about a minute left. Mm-hmm. Can you tell people how they can volunteer, give some information for them to get in touch?
Yes, you can call CDRC at any time. Again, we're in three counties. We're in Tompkins, Chemung, and Schuyler counties. Here in Tompkins County, the number is 273-9347. You can call and speak with one of our staff persons. We often, our mediators stick with us for a long time. So every once in a while, we do a call for our volunteers, and we do a training.
Mm-hmm. What about a website?
Website's cdrc.org. Pretty simple.
Yeah.
So there are opportunities for volunteering, and just call and have a conversation with us, and we can see if that would meet.
Help to change your life, perhaps, and certainly somebody in the community. Well, Jeff Shepherdson, thank you so much for joining us.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this has been Jeff Shepherdson from the Community Dispute Resolution Center.
Thanks,
thank you,
Tish,
so much for your work.
Thanks, Tish.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.